This chazar zeichen is a bechach esu shalag from Yehudim sechetz gittin daf mem dalad. A braisa says if a guy forcibly takes a slave from a Jew as payment for a loan, or if a guy otherwise took the slave by force, the slave does not go out free because the yid never consented to the guy's taking of the slave. A braisa says if a Jew's granary was forcibly taken by the king, if it was taken to repayment for a loan, the yid has to give ma'isa for the produce of the granary. And if it was taken for no reason, he does not have to give ma'isa. We see that something taken for a debt is viewed as if it was sold, which is not what the earlier braisa said. Where it said the case of the seized field is different because the Jew is gaining from the amount of ma'isa, since even the amount of ma'aser is taken in repayment for the loan, and he therefore has to give ma'aser based on his benefiting that amount. We have learned that Rav said if someone sells his slave to a non-Jewish blackmailer so that this blackmailer leave him alone, the slave goes out free. Rav said in Rav's case, he could have appeased him with another asset and didn't. The Braisa is discussing he could not have done so. Rav Yirmi asked, what's the halacha if a yid sold a slave temporarily for a period of 30 days? Would he go out free for that? Presumably, in the case of Rav, the blackmailer was going to return the slave at some point, and still we see that the slave goes out free. Mar says, no, maybe Rav was discussing a blackmailer who was going to keep the slave permanently. Rav Yirmi asked, what if he sold the slave without the right to put the slave to work, and therefore the slave won't be forced to be over on mitzvahs? What if he sells him without the right to make the slave be over on any mitzvahs? What if he sells him without the right to work on Shabbos and Yom Tov? What if he sold him to a ger toishev who keeps the Shabbos mitzvah b'nei noach? What if he sells him to a yid who does not keep the Torah, Yisrael Mumer? What if he sells him to a kuti? Mar says, we can answer one question based on a braisa which says that selling a slave to a ger toishev is like selling a slave to a guy. With regard to selling a kuti or to a Yisrael Mumer, some say it's like selling to a guy, others say it's like selling to a yid. Fact number like this, the answer Rami, if a slave gave himself up to non-Jewish kidnappers and the master cannot get him from them by Jewish law or by civil law, is the master allowed to accept money from them as payment for the slave if they offer payment? Or as Vika said, a braisa says if a yid sells his house and eretz yisrael to a guy, the money he receives is usher to have anor from. If the house is taken forcibly and it cannot be taken back by Jewish or civil law, the yid is allowed to take money for the house. The same would presumably be hold true in the case of the slave. The Gemara says, no, maybe that the rabbanim were not geyser in the case of the house, since people need a place to live. Allowing them to take the money in this particular case will not lead other people to sell their house in eretz yisrael to a guy. However, regarding a slave, maybe they were geyser against accepting money so that one not come to sell the slave to a guy. On the other hand, maybe there's no difference and therefore he may accept the money. Rabbi Ami sent a response that in this case it would be mutter for him to take the money since there's no way for him to get the slave back. Rabbi Shimon Levi said if someone sells a slave to a guy, we penalize him. They have to try and buy back the slave for up to 100 times the slave's value. In fact, does it actually mean 100 times, or is it just an exaggerated amount? Everywhere we find the Reish Lakish that someone who sells a large animal to a guy is penalized and has to buy it back for up to 10 times its value. Presumably, this is the same severity as the slave, and we see that he only has to spend up to 10 times his value. Therefore, the 100 times must be an exaggeration. Gemara says, no, the case is not the same. The slave is over on mitzvahs every day that he's under the control of the guy. Therefore, maybe that the slave, for the slave, he has to spend considerably more money to redeem him. Another version says, Rabbi Shimon Levi said, if someone sells his slave to a guy, we penalize him that he must try and buy back the slave for up to 10 times the slave's value. The Gemara asks whether this is an actual limit, or does he have to pay more if necessary? The Gemara answers, we find the Reish Lakish says someone sells a large animal to a guy is penalized and has to buy it back for up to 100 times its value. Presumably, this is the same severity as a slave, and he has to spend even up to 100 times its value. Therefore, the same would be for a slave. The Gemara says the cases may be different, because after redemption of the slave goes out free, and maybe that's why he doesn't have to spend as much to redeem it. The Gemara asks, if that's the reason for the difference, that would only account for having him to spend one more time of the value on the animal than on the slave, because at the end of the day, he keeps it. He has to pay for that keeping it, which is one more time its value. Mara says maybe that since the sale of the slave is not a common thing, the rabbanim were not goyzer to spend as much on the redemption as they did by an animal, because selling an animal to a guy is more of a dover shchiach. If a person sold a slave to a guy and then died, do we penalize the Yorshim to buy back the slave as well? Even if we say that in the case of a kain who intentionally makes a mum in a bechor and is penalized, that he's not allowed to eat the bechor based on that mum, and we say that his Yorshim are also penalized and also can't eat the bechor based on that mum, it may be that over there we're strict regarding bechor because it's a mum, it's a case of mum which is an issur d'oraisa, but selling a slave is only issur d'rabbanan, and therefore maybe we don't penalize the Yorshim. And even though we find that although we penalize one who purposely left work to be done on Chol HaMoed and we prohibit that work from being done, even if it will result in a loss, we do not penalize the Yorshim of such a person and would allow them to do the work that was left for Chol HaMoed to prevent the loss. It may be that we don't penalize them because the father over there did not actually commit any Isser in that case, because he actually did not do the work on Chol HaMoed, he died beforehand. But regarding the slave, since the Isser was done, do we say that we only penalize him, and since he's no longer alive, there is no penalty? Or do we say that we penalize his money and the Yorshim must therefore spend the money from the inheritance to redeem the slave? Yeah. Rabasi said, we have learned a mission that says that if one worked the field during Shemitah in a way that it's also deraisa, he's penalized and may not work the field the year after Shemitah. Rabbi Yossi, the son of Chanina, said if the person died after working the field in this way on Shemitah, his children would be allowed to work the field the next year. We see that the Rabban did not penalize the Yerushim. Abaye said, we see the same concept where someone made another person's produce tame. Although the Rabban regards that he has to pay for the damage, even though it's has a shein and nicker, but if the person died, his children would not have to pay for such a damage. Again, we see that when it comes to the Rabbanon, we did not penalize the Yerushim. The Mishnah said, Oyle Chutzlaret. The Bright said, if one sells a slave from Eretz Yisrael to Chutzlaret, the slave goes out free and requires to get shechar from the second master. Shimon Gamliel says, sometimes he would go out free and sometimes he would not. For example, if the document of sale says, I am selling this slave to Pliny the Antuchi, meaning from Antuchia, he would not go out free because it may mean that he's originally from there, but he has no current plans to relocate the slave to there. However, if the document says, I am selling my slave to Pliny the Antuchi of Antuchia, he would go out free because that suggests that the intent is to move the slave over there outside of Eretz Yisrael. In fact, Marabraita says, if the document says this slave is sold to the Antuchi, he goes out free, but if it says the Antuchi lives in Lud, in Eretz Yisrael, he would not go out free. Rav Shimon Gamliel says, it's a theory from what we just said. Rav Shimon Gamliel is discussing where the buyer had a real house in Eretz Yisrael, so there's no reason to think that he'll take the slave to Chutzar. The second Braisa is discussing where he only had a temporary house in Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Yemi asked, if a man from Bavel marries a woman from Eretz Yisrael, and the woman brings slaves into the marriage, and their intention is to eventually settle back in Bavel, would the slaves go out free? Is it considered if the woman is selling her slaves into Chutz La'aretz or not? This is a question whether we hold that at divorce, a woman can demand the return of her dowry, the actual items, so it's never considered to be sold to the husband, and the slaves would therefore maybe not go out free, or maybe it's encumbered to the husband during the marriage, and would therefore be considered as if it were sold to him. It's also a question if you hold that the husband can refuse to return the actual items of the dowry, and just has to give the shavius, and it's therefore considered as if it was sold to him, or maybe it's never truly owned by him, but rather he has the rights to the produce only, and therefore it's as if it was never sold to him. So what's the halacha? Teiku by the shayla. Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yechanan taught me that if a slave follows his master to Syria, the master sells him there, the slave goes out free. Reflecting more, Reb Chiya has taught a brisa that when a slave voluntarily leaves Eretz Yisrael, he loses his right to freedom by being sold there. Marcel Reb Yechanan is discussing where the master's plan was to return to Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, if he sold him to remain there permanently, he goes out free. Reb Chiya was discussing where the intent was to remain in Chutz La'aretz. It's a brisa which can be understood with this distinction as well. Rav Anna said, I heard two things from Shmuel. One, that a slave that was sold to Chutz La'aretz must be freed. And the second, that a field sold in Yovel is not sold at all. Regarding one of these, Shmuel said that the money has to be given back to the purchaser. And regarding one of them, he said it does not have to be given back. But I don't remember regarding which of these psaks was said. Rabbi Yosef said we can figure it out on our own. The Braisa said that a slave sold to Chutz La'aretz must be freed by the second master. We see the sale is valid and therefore the money would not have to be returned. With regard to the sale in Yovel, he said the sale is not a sale. That would suggest the money has to be returned. Rav Anan was not aware of this Braisa and therefore couldn't come to this conclusion on his own. Also, the fact that Shmuel said the sale is not a sale may mean that the seller keeps the money as a matona. So therefore he couldn't have answered that on his own. Abaye asked Rabbi Yosef, why is it that the purchaser of a slave is the one who is penalized? He must let him free and does not get the money returned. Why not the seller? Rabbi Yosef said, if there's no willing buyer, the slave wouldn't have been sold to Chutz La'aretz, so it's the buyer who's responsible. I asked if there's no seller, there'd be no purchaser, so the seller should be liable. The Mara says it makes sense to penalize the purchaser because we should penalize the place where the prohibited item, meaning the slave, is right now, which is with the purchaser, and that's why the purchaser is the one who gets penalized.